I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Brothers in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Heidi Nessler, who is the owner of the Wanpaku Natto, which is a producer of traditional Japanese natto based in Portland, Oregon. And if you go to the supermarket in Japan, at least 5 or probably up to 20 different kinds of natto are sold. And while you're in Japan, you may be asked, can you eat natto? It's a test to see how Japanese you are. And they say natto is one of the stinkiest foods in Japan, and also it's the one of the healthiest foods on the planet. And it is somewhat addictive too, like stinky cheese. So today we'll discuss what exactly natto is, health benefit of natto, how to eat natto, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher as a podcast. If you haven't, please go to iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe to Japan Eats. Also, if you have ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. And you can email us at japaneats@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. Now let's start our conversation with Heidi Nessler. Hello, Heidi.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. You live in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
But where are you originally from?
Well, actually, originally I'm from Poughkeepsie, New York. Mm. So this trip back to New York.
Okay, welcome back.
This is the first time in about 30 years.
Oh, wow.
So it's been, very nostalgic.
Interesting. Yeah. So, but I don't think you grew up eating natto.
No, I did not. I did not grow up eating natto.
So you founded your natto company, Wanpaku Natto, in 2017.
Right, began it, yes.
And but before that, you worked as a cooking instructor. So how did you get into the food business in the first place?
I grew up always interested in food. My family was early foodies. I think I raised 2 children, and I wanted to bring the best food to them. And my children are Japanese, so I learned about Japanese cooking, and I wanted to have the most traditional Japanese food for them, as mm-hmm. well as, and then, really rediscovering what that meant, for my culture as well. And so learning to make, bone broth and, really cooking from scratch. And so, I really wanted to pass those skills on because those are, lost in a generation. Mm. So I began teaching traditional foods, including a lot of fermented foods.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's lost tradition, but it's reviving rapidly.
Yeah, recently. It's very exciting.
Right.
Yeah,
and including Nordic cuisine and all those.
Oh, I know. Right? Yeah, I'm into all of it. So,
right.
Yeah.
And they like fermentation.
And fermentation's always there in every culture. So, yeah.
Right. And The Renee from Noma, I heard he made edamame or like a green pea miso or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, miso is a really interesting one because you can really use any type of bean. Well, not maybe. You can have a wide range of experimentation with miso.
And, right.
Yeah, but and it's so exciting to see those different misos coming up.
Well, then your website, you said you call yourself fermentation teacher.
So I do.
Right, so you really got into that area.
I really dug deep. Yeah, I mean, I think you know, I lived in Japan in the early 90s, you know, raised two kids there, mm-hmm. you know, started to raise them. They were born there. Mm. And, you know, I was making tsukemon. I was making Japanese pickles.
Wow.
You know, making it with the rice bran pickling pot. Mm-hmm. You know.
By the way, the mutual friends, Elizabeth Anto.
Yes.
Yeah, she came to the show, and then I think it's episode 83. She talked about how to make Japanese kimono.
Yeah, and her description in Kansha of, you know, how to make the rice bran pickles is just, I mean, it's very accurate, and it's so incredibly beautifully written.
Right.
I mean, it brings tears to my eyes to read it. I mean, yeah, there I am, you know, crying over pickles. But, you know, so I was living in the Japanese countryside, you know, sort of between Kitakyushu and Oita.
That's really the southern Japan.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, so I was learning really about the culture through food and you know, a lot of different pickles and, you know, and I think, what did I understand really that I was, oh, they're healthy. I'm eating more vegetables. I didn't deeply understand what fermentation meant, although I was doing it. It was quite odd. And so I returned to the United States probably 2005, you know, back and forth a little bit, Japan, the United States. And, but 2005 and, you know, I guess I was thinking about, well, Sandor Katz is a huge influence on me. He's a mentor. Mm. He had that wild fermentation, and I got a hold of that and was super excited to explore, you know, sort of sauerkraut, you know, the ferments of my ancestors from Northern Europe. And then, of course, ferments from all over the world. And I've taken classes and courses and residencies with Sandor. And, you know, so that really, I think his style of, you know, sort of empowering people to take these, learn these skills and take them out into the world and demystifying it. It's not scary or dangerous. We're not going to kill the family, you know. That kind of thing.
Well, that's interesting because I think, you know, the fermentation cells, because recently very scientifically analyzed.
Yeah.
And then the borderline between rotten and fermentation is right. You like it, it's fermentation.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, it's rotten.
Right. And also that control that you have. I mean, we're sort of directing the bacteria to do what we want it to do for our own labor benefit.
Not to the extreme thing.
Yeah. So. Right. And many of those things occurred by happy accident, you know, so, you know, I mean, who were, you know, think about our ancestors and like, who came up with this kind of thing? Who discovered or who came up with natto, for example?
Right, the first time who tried to eat it.
Yeah, that's right, very brave. Right. Our adventurous, the adventurous ones.
Right. And so what was your first experience of eating natto?
Well, I was in college in on Long Island, actually. And so I went to an alternative Quaker college, very... not, you know, we didn't have classes, we didn't have grades, you know.
Nice.
And right, I mean, it's sort of like today's gap year times four. That was my education, you know. So I had a sort of interesting Japanese boyfriend at the time, and we were working, we were sort of doing, you know, the odd jobs and going out to work, you know, doing gardening, I think. And so we were running late, and we needed a hearty breakfast, and he mixed together I think like in a Tupperware bowl or something, you know, sort of brown rice and natto and with a big spoon in it. And we got in the car and he's like, here, eat this, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, that was my introduction. And without knowing it, he was, you know, checking me out. Like, is she going to like it? And I was like, oh, this is good. And, you know, because I think I had no preconceived notions about it. You know, I think it's generally... considered, you know, an acquired taste. You mm-hmm. know? So I ate the natto. It was, oh, this is really good. I think I, my first impression was that it had a nuttiness to it. And that's often what I hear people say.
Mm.
You know, mm, it's a little nutty.
Right.
And yeah, so I passed the natto test and, you know,
the natto test,
you know, we raised two kids together, you know, we were together for 20 some odd years and yeah, mm. I mean, it was a really interesting beginning.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's very impressive that, you know, I think people scare foreigners, gaijin,
yeah.
too much about natto because in fact, it's not, there's nothing special. It's like, to me, stinky cheese is a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Intense.
I mean, I think there are a lot of foods that are more challenging than natto.
Right.
But it sort of falls into that category. I mean, it's always put there. And I guess I'm trying to take it out of that category a little bit. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how did you end up making natto?
Well, yeah, I think it's interesting because all of these, you know, once you learn more about fermentation and, oh, that's fermented, oh, that's a product of fermentation. I mean, there's this natural, with me at least, this DIY spirit of like, hmm, how is that made? And, you know, I grew up, my mother made yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes we bought yogurt, sometimes we had homemade yogurt. And I think with natto, I just didn't think about it much. But then when I lived in Kyoto in early 2000s, I think,
That's a nice experience, by the way. Living in Kyoto, so cool.
I know, that's another show. Mm. You know, I think you mentioned all of the nattos that are in the Japanese supermarket. Well, in Kyoto, I was just like, ooh, you know, and natto's not too expensive. It's just beans. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
it's like even $1 or $2.
Yeah, 100 yen or something.
Right.
Know? And so the difference between like a sort of ordinary store brand of natto and the artisan natto, you know, is like, well, let's give it a try. And I mean, it really blew me away. I mean, the taste was so interesting. And it's like, the package looks so cool. And, you know, I'm looking at it and like, wow, you know, that address, it's like right over there somewhere. So, you know, I think knowing that there was like this small production of natto in Kyoto, I mean, and the tastes really spoiled me. And then we moved back to the United States and our family was gifted a natto maker. And, you know, I mean, essentially, when I saw, I was like, ooh, you know, when I saw it, it was essentially a yogurt maker. And so, you know, if you're to make natto at home, you know, your yogurt maker is probably a good bet. But so we were making natto in small batches. And then probably about 9 years ago, so when my first workshop with Sandor, he came to Portland probably 2006 or something. And we, it is amazing what came out of that, you know, many friendships and sort of the
seeds. Who's that?
Sandor Katz. He's the author of The Art of Fermentation.
Oh,
he's,
okay, right.
You know, when we think about why, you know, we are all talking about fermentation and a little, you know, everybody's sort of aware of it now. I think he's really responsible for this kind of rebirth. He's so humble, he wouldn't say that, but,
right.
You know, he's certainly a very important teacher to me. And so from that experience of learning the basics of fermentation, you know, it was like a 3-day thing where we learned all sorts of interesting things. But, and I also made some really interesting lifelong friendships there. And out of that, you know, started the Portland Fermentation Festival. And it was one of the first in the country.
Huh, that sounds very Portland, Oregon.
It doesn't it? So, you know, flash forward ahead. I'm, you know, one of the organizers now. We're about to have our 8th one. And, but at that first one, you know, they put out the call, like, amateur fermenters, anyone who, if you ferment something, bring a gallon of it, you know, to share with friends, you know, that kind of call. And it was amazing how many people turned out. Now, I don't know if fermentation back then thought, oh, booze, alcohol, like, let's show up. But we had, I mean, it was this hot day in October, and we had, like, I want to say close to 400 or 500 people show up.
Wow.
And we were just not prepared for that. But, you know, that was the first time we took it beyond our little yogurt maker level and really figured out a way to do it on a larger scale. And and we were making little sushi rolls and introducing it then. So that was about 9 years ago, just about. And I think it was very, I mean, back then, I think people were maybe hadn't heard of it or, it's the same kind of mix. I've heard of this before. I've not heard of it before. So I had some students from the College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland. Like, we've just learned about natto-kinase in class, and we're so excited to try your natto. They knew about the benefits, and they were like waiting for us. You know,
that's very Portlandia.
I know. Portlandia has a lot of truth in it. And so, you know, they were the first in line, and they tried it, and wow, their reaction. This is the first time to our debut of natto. And I think they may have spit it out. Turned, thank you very much. But it was interesting because people were like, cool, what's this? And they had never heard of it. And they're like, oh, this is awesome. I'm coming back for more. And, you know, it was, so people were connecting with it who had no experience with it. And that was interesting to me based on kind of the stereotypes about natto. It's an acquired taste. You have to have grown up with it.
Right.
Yeah. So that sort of thing.
Okay, so for listeners who have no idea what a natto
is. What is natto, right?
Let's talk about it. So what is natto?
What is natto? So natto is a traditionally fermented soybean. So it's typically eaten for breakfast. And, you know, like miso is fermented soybeans, and we're saying we could use other beans for that. In Southeast Asian culture, there's tempeh. You know, these are fermented beans. So natto is a little different than those because it uses a bacteria for the starter culture. So, and then, you know, in the fermentation process, it becomes stinky, and some would say stinky, fragrant, and sticky.
Right.
And so yeah, it's ferment. You steam the beans, soak the beans, steam the beans, and then you inoculate them with the starter culture, and they are fermented. You hold it at, not surprisingly, yogurt sort of temperatures. If anybody's made yogurt, it's a similar process.
Right.
And I think that so you know, there's a range there. Like I've seen in literature, like 6 to 24 hours, which is a huge range. So. Fermentation takes place during that time, and
but
then
let's just
oh,
you
we're
know,
back
like
up a
you're going
yeah.
like really way more.
Oh yeah, this is my passion. So
I know, but I want to hear about that because I think you know our listeners can even make natto by themselves if they want to. So
they
I'm
going to
save it for you know a minute later.
So but,
so I heard that the do you know the history of natto?
The history of natto, you know, there's so many stories out there. It's hard to know. So basically, kind of knowing a little bit of the background, natto is the starter culture, the bacteria occurs naturally on the rice straw. So if you think back to when, you know, Japanese were, starting to grow soybeans and to grow rice, you know, and then you have the straw. So these things are kind of in the air,
right.
Literally. I mean, the spore, you know, the
right.
natto.
And also the Japanese, you know, old time, they have a straw mats at home.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you drop soybeans.
Yeah. Now we have the first natto. And I'm sure that must have happened many different places in Japan where people were eating soybeans and had straw mats and
right.
straw roots.
I heard it's like the first one. Recorded was 2,000 years ago.
I've heard that too, and I think that that's kind of interesting because, you know, these are farm folks. So who's making those records? You know, like it's maybe all these instances of natto fermentation. You know, were not even recorded. It was just sort of.
Well, maybe some remains.
Yeah, that's an interesting field, isn't it?
And also, I heard that in 11th century, Shogun Minamoto no Yoshie brought cooked soybeans packed in, rice straw bags to the war, and the beans fermented naturally. And his soldier noticed its toasty, nutty taste, and then it smelled, and then Shogun loved it, and then it became popular.
Yes, I love that story. I mean, it's sort of, with the natto being kept warm in the straw, wrapped in straw, and kept warm by the horse, going into battle or something.
Exactly, the horse brag, right?
Yeah, I love that that image.
And also I heard, during the Edo period, it's which is 17th and 18th centuries, there is a, ice cream truck, people says, that to hear the sound, but there's natto vendors.
Yes,
and
right.
then they are so early that you got woken up, like, they wake you up, natto on the street.
And that's why We eat it for breakfast.
Yeah,
right? I think. Yeah,
right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. Mm. Yeah.
So, but anyway, so what are the ingredients of natto?
Oh, it's really simple. Soybeans and the starter culture, natto bacillus.
Mm. So what is
bacillus subtilis natto? I think I said that backwards, right?
So the bacillus subtilis natto, that's the science
variation.
Name,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what is it? What is the difference between other bacteria?
Well, I mean, so going back to the history of natto, I think it sort of was considered a seasonal food because it's when this bacteria was on the straw. So mm-hmm. it was more of a truly a wild ferment. It was coming from the straw itself. And of course, later scientists isolated the bacteria, similar to, you know, having a little packet of yogurt mm-hmm. culture starters, you know, that sort of thing, that you could make it year round. You can make it in commercial production. Mm-hmm. So they really isolated that strain that worked the best with making natto. But that type of bacteria, you know, it's interesting to think about. Okay, this came about when there's the soybeans and the rice in cultivation, but you know, this bacteria has been around for like, I don't know, like 3 billion years or something crazy like that.
Right.
You know, sort of waiting. And but you know, this kind of fermentation is in Southeast Asia, it's in West Africa. Mm. You know, I think Japanese in eating natto, it's more of a larger part of the diet, as I understand it. I'm really fascinated by the sort of other cultures,
right?
But I've heard of that. But yeah, but that particular strain, Bacillus subtilis natto, mm-hmm. is specifically for, you know, soybean fermentation.
Right. You know, there are other soybean fermenting bacteria, but I heard this one is very strong that it can reach to the large intestine even. So
yeah, I mean, it's a really that is my experience as a fermenter, you know, that when I started, and I think you've probably heard like the sort of bacteria around a natto maker, you know, mm-hmm. sort of, we have this, if you think of Moyashimon or something like that, that right. great comic book about fermentation in Japan, you know, that we probably are, I probably have this lovely protective suit of natto culture. Mm. And it does, just in my own experience, I have no evidence of this other than my experience, is that it kind of muscles out the other ferments. So, you know, trying to make yogurt in a kitchen that I've been making natto in is a little tricky. It often fails. I think it's muscled out by the...
Right. But I heard if it goes into your intestine, you know, they grow good bacteria and suppress bad ones and then generate strong enzyme to digest protein and carbohydrates.
Yeah, it really is in that category of superfoods. And, you know, the sort of folk wisdom lore was that it was good if you had a stomach ailment. You know, it was good if, you know, you'd eat something bad, then natto would help with that.
Right.
And, you know, just the process of fermentation starts the breakdown, as you said. So it's much easier to digest.
Mm.
And that's really sort of the theme of all fermented foods is that, you know, that starts that process of digestion. It's sort of the, you know, the pickling pod is the auxiliary stomach or something. It's starting that process that makes it just easier for us to digest.
And interesting.
That's certainly true with natto. But, you know, then, yeah, the fermentation process itself creates all these superfood players.
Yeah. But actually, when I have late night dinner and my stomach is not super happy and I have natto, like, wow.
That's, wise woman.
Yeah, it's clean. You feel instantly nicer, lighter.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that people have understood that for a long time.
So you mentioned briefly, but what is the process of making natto? Because, like I said, you can make your own natto at home.
You can, yeah, and it's so you need, like I said, the temperature controlling device, and if it's not a yogurt maker, I've used like coolers with. Maybe a little dangerous, but like a heating pad that doesn't turn off and I just keep it on.
Mm.
Like an old school one that doesn't have the automatic shutoff.
Right.
And, you know, keep a thermometer in there to regulate the temperature. So any way that you can think of that you would make yogurt is a way to control the temperature. Right. Of course, I had some equipment built by a tempeh making friend of mine to control the temperature. Mm. So yeah, after soaking the beans and steaming the beans, you can buy the little natto starter culture, mm-hmm. and you need just the tiniest amount.
Where do you buy it?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can buy it online. Cultures for Health, mm. Gem Cultures; those are two big ones that offer, you know, fermenters, okay. little starting things.
Okay.
And well, and I've seen it actually at my Wajimaya's, our Japanese supermarket mm-hmm. out in Pacific Northwest, and so they have it sometimes next to the natto. It's really sweet. And yeah, and then you keep it in a, you know, that sort of temperature controlled environment.
Mm-hmm.
And
what kind of temperature is it?
It's, you know, I think we have our incubator set to 106.
Okay.
So it's interesting, if anybody's made tempeh before, it has this, you know, it starts to generate heat at a certain point. So you're trying to control the heat, and whoa, the tempeh itself, or in this case, the natto itself, it starts to generate its own heat. So you just have to kind of watch it.
Mm.
You know, it's there's a range, but, you know, I think, you know, it's tricky. It can go wrong. But that's part of the learning process.
Right.
But I should say, you know, it might be good to have everybody in the household on board for natto, because it does have a... I love natto, but the, you know, it does really... You walk in, it's like, whoa, natto. You know, it's like a really strong smell when you're fermenting.
Right. So. Well, that's a good segue to the next question about the smell, because when I grew up, my father hated the smell of natto, so the natto was banned from my family. So I've never seen natto by myself in my eyes until I was 25 or something.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and then recently I started eating. A couple of years ago, I really got into natto. Every single morning I wake up.
You're hooked.
And then, I look forward to it.
That's great.
Yeah. So...
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that, and I don't know, maybe you can kind of let me know if this seems true to you, that 25% of Japanese don't like natto.
That sounds
right.
So
think of a family of four, one of the people in that family, one person is not going to like natto. I mean, that's kind of held true in my family.
Right, but I think it's, you know, I think you should... see the unit not as an individual but the family, 25% of the family, because like you said, you have to be on board. That's why I never had natto.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to a certain extent, natto is regional in Japan, historically so. But then beyond that, there's always going to be someone who's like, ew. You know?
Right. But how do you, you know, it's some people think it's not pleasant, but to me, it was even the first time. It was quite pleasant to me. It was like a coffee and
I've
nutty.
Heard coffee, nutty. Yeah, these are the positive descriptors I've heard for
I think the chemical called the pyrazine.
Oh, yeah.
So that's in cocoa and coffee. And it's the same thing. So that makes sense. It's not a coincidence of my imagination.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think it also comes back to the idea of, is this an acquired taste, or what are our preconceptions going into it?
I think listeners who never tried natto should be just openly trying it. It's like, it's you know, it's, I think Japanese people tend to scare foreigners to.
Yes, like, I think that's very true. It's... you know, a sort of test, as you said earlier. I think that, you know, how Japanese are you? Or, you know, like, can you, you eat natto? And, I mean, so there's that idea that natto is unique to Japan, and it's kind of not, you know, in the sense that that flavor profile and similarly fermented beans is in other parts of the world.
Mm.
But then the other piece of that is like when, so people approach me to try it and they're like, oh, I've had natto, I didn't really like it. And, you know, I sort of charm them into trying it again.
Mm.
I say, you know, take a no thank you portion. Just, you know, try my natto. It's a little milder than other people's. People mm-hmm. who said they haven't liked natto like it. Many children who don't like natto like it. So then they try it again.
And also I've noticed that depending on which brand, There's a diverse difference.
Yeah.
So I have a specific natto brand that I really like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the trials and errors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, people try it for the first time with no preconceived notions. And they're like, oh, it's not bad. It's good.
So what is the substance that makes natto stinky?
Stinky?
Yeah. Stinky or like, you know, intense flavor.
Yeah, I think, so if folks have an experience of fermentation and they've done kimchi or they've done fermented veggies, sauerkraut, I mean, those ferments are, the food is preserved through acidification, and that's how we know it's safe.
Mm.
And that's that wonderful sour taste that we'll
see.
But with natto, it's an alkaline ferment, so it's quite a different category and something that we don't have a lot of flavor experience. So it's that it's an alkaline ferment. So if you think about, you mentioned stinky cheese, but like that really ripe cheese, there's a little, and you know, sometimes when natto is, I don't know, been around for a little past its prime, it has that strong ammonia.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's that alkaline.
Right. It's produced by the natto bacillus.
Yes.
Specifically.
Yeah.
And I heard it's like organic acid and all those things.
Oh, yeah.
Created by natto, bacillus natto.
Yeah, so much happening.
Right. Okay. So, the other thing in natto is just the gooiness.
Yeah. So,
which I think is similar to okra.
It is. And have you had, I was once served in Japan, and that sort of became my tradition too, of lightly steaming okra, chopping it and mixing it with the natto.
Right.
And of course my mother says, oh, sticky meat, sticky, you know, it's sort of like really.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is very similar to okra in its stickiness. And that comes from the polyglutamic acid. That's this, you know, substance that's produced in the, and you know, really that's how I know, I've been successful with this ferment. So like after, you know, 18, 20 hours, I open it up and I drag a fork across it. You know, so it'll have, when it's ready, this sort of white sheen. Oh, it looks good. And then I'll drag a spoon across and then I'll see those threads.
Okay.
So I think that's good natto. And when it's not successful, it's not stringy like that.
Yeah, when it's, I have a good natto and I stir it, it's like bubbly almost.
Yes, yes, it really does change.
Right, so that's that, you know, the white stuff and bubbly stuff, I heard it's just umami, because you said the polyglutamic acid, which includes a glutamic acid.
Yes, yeah, so, and by stirring, you know, it becomes more flavorful. So I also think that if people have had a bad experience with natto or didn't like it, you know, perhaps they didn't get the proper introduction, it wasn't prepared well. So I think that's super key for that first experience, is just to stir it.
Right.
And I stir it 200 times. And I figured it out because I demonstrate this so much, you know, I'm up front talking and stirring, so it's 2 minutes. So, I mean, that's a lot of stirring.
I'm sure you know you've seen that machine, the Japanese toy company.
Yes, I saw that.
And so they did really mandate you to stir 424 times.
424. Okay,
but one stir by the machine counts two. You know,
okay,
one by
so I'm pretty spot on. Do you remember that program?
I mean, you can half the time.
Oh, you half the time.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's pretty ridiculously long stirring, but.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. I think I would do probably like 50 times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you can also chop it, you know, and that sort of accomplishes the same thing.
Okay.
Almost, yeah.
Right. And I also heard that, you know, that the stickiness, that's called mucilage, which is also in okra. So there is a reason.
Yeah.
To have same texture.
Right, right.
Right.
Similar.
Okay, so let's take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the impressive health benefit of natto.
Oh,
so
okay,
please
yes.
stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Heidi Nessler, who is the owner of the Wanpak Natto, which is a Portland-based maker of traditional Japanese natto. So, so we talked about beneficial bacteria in natto.
Yes.
But what are the benefits does natto have?
Wow. It really belongs in that superfood category. I mean, it's... In fermentation, often it's a way to preserve vitamins, and also vitamins are increased and vitamins are created. And so in the case of natto, K2 is created, which is, important for so many reasons. Blood clotting is always mentioned. The interesting thing, vitamin K2 is one, natto kinase. These are things that are isolated and presented as supplements in health food stores.
Right.
So they're in natto. And so the K2, it's really hard to, it's to get a plant-based source of K2. And
right, so because usually it's in beef or, cow's liver.
Yeah,
eggs.
Or eggs and cheese from cows that have grazed on pasture. And it's just a really important one. It works synergistically with D, and it has so many important benefits.
And also, if you want to have a lot of K2 and they eat a lot of meat or eggs, you have other concerns like too much of calories or fat or whatever. But we have a friend, Elizabeth Santo, did an interesting article, and she compares, if you compare 45 grams or 1.6 ounces of natto and the same burger patty, natto contains 80 calories, 7.4 grams of protein, and the burger patty contains 180 calories versus 80 of natto and fewer than 7 grams of protein. And natto is also rich in iron, calcium, potassium, vitamin B2, K2. It's like spinach or banana or milk, like all those good things in another box.
Right. I mean, it's very nutritious in its own right. I mean, it's just... and then on top of that, the extra goodies of the natto kinase. And,
right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the natto kinase because that's a very important keyword, right?
It's super important for cardiovascular health and, I think... just anecdotally, in Japanese relatives of mine who've, just eaten natto every morning for breakfast. Have been, very healthy. And it's, of course, they eat all these other healthy things as well. But, the natto kinase is so important for cardiovascular, K2.
It's an enzyme, right?
Yes. And it's produced through fermentation.
So you clean up your... blood vessels.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, there's also something called PQQ. Have you seen that? It's really good for beautiful skin.
Antioxidants.
Mm. Yeah.
You have a great skin.
Thank you.
So the natto kinase, that's an enzyme, and also it's contained in that fluffy, sticky.
That fluffy stuff. What's that, people say?
Right, so you have to eat that part.
That's the good stuff, yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And so how do you eat natto?
So typically natto is eaten for breakfast. I usually just do what you do. I mix it up and add a few little condiments like soy sauce or tamari. If I have access to really good eggs, I'll add a raw egg yolk and green onions and for that, if taste is a concern, if it's a little The ammonia taste is a little too strong. Even just a drop of rice wine vinegar is really helps to cut that down. You know, and when you get the natto packets in the store in those awful styrofoam containers, you know, they'll have those flavor packets inside and also some hot mustard, and hot mustard sort of does the same thing. And so you know, you mix that out and you have it with rice, miso soup, some pickles, little, you know, maybe grilled fish.
Right.
You know, and
I think my brand that I chose is I never smelled ammonia smell.
Yeah.
So that I think it's important to, if you, you know, my listeners, if you want to try the first one, it's, you know, I think depending on which one you pick, and if the first one gets stinky, you should try a different brand.
I think that's really good advice. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I gave you some natto. You can smell it. It's not stinky.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
I was like, doesn't smell as bad as I thought, or it doesn't really smell. I mean, and then some people, I have some clients, you know, and customers who like it aged more, and so they just keep it in the fridge a little longer, and it gets that more, you know, interesting tastes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, I mean, you could do natto. So that's like a typical presentation in the morning, but, you know, you could probably Google me and find me making natto okonomiyaki.
Oh, wow.
So if, you know, you want to have natto but not the stickiness, it's in the pancake. You can put natto in miso soup, natto in the dipping sauce from noodles in the summer. And, you know, then, so, you know, I'm trying to sell natto to an American audience and thinking of other ways. And I think that, you know, I have this great guy in Portland who works for me, a natto freak geek, and he came up with a really amazing natto deviled egg.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of taking that original idea of natto and egg going well together. And of course, natto and omelets, all that. But with the deviled egg, you know, taking the hard-boiled egg yolk and mixing that with some chopped word up in the food processor. And, it, you know, it was really yummy.
Right. Yeah, I don't eat that way.
I should give you the recipe.
Yeah. Right. Wow. So, yeah, and I heard somebody tried the natto as a pizza topping, and I heard it worked.
Oh, wow.
With the cheese and then...
Yeah, we'll have to suggest it right over here. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great idea, actually. Right.
And
yeah.
By the way, I put some chives, so scallions.
Yes.
And the mustard, Dijon mustard, and a bit of wasabi.
Yeah.
And then mix them. And sometimes wrap in nori.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it all sounds good.
Yeah.
So if I sometimes don't have access to good eggs, I will add some toasted sesame oil. And that brings a kind of creaminess, richness to it as well.
I'll try it tomorrow morning.
Yeah, give it a try. And I love kimchi chopped up in natto, too.
That's
like my favorite way.
I know. 7 days a week, different
yeah,
ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay. So, so we talked about, you know, those the health benefits. But let's talk about your natto products. So what is unique about your natto?
Well, I mean, I'm using soybeans, organic soybeans from the upper Midwest. And, you know, it's interesting because I think Japanese natto is made with soybeans from Canada and the United States, same area. But, you know, they're smaller. So my beans are a little bigger.
Right. I heard it's smaller because it ferments earlier.
Oh, that could be, yeah.
Because economical.
Right.
Or factories.
That makes sense.
But personally, I think, you know, smaller tastes differently.
Yeah.
So it's a personal taste as well.
I think that my natto is a little milder because of the beans are a little larger. Surface area sort of equation.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm going with what's available to me, the best soybeans that are available. And, you know, I've... so they have that original natto, and then I'm working on some other nattos, like non-soy nattos.
Oh, yeah. So you, and then, first of all, you have non-GMO.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
And then you use soybeans and navy bean.
Yeah. So I started experimenting with other beans reluctantly, or I don't know, slowly. I think because my early experiments were like, oh, this doesn't taste like natto. This isn't what I want. But then, you know, I was in the spirit of experimentation, kept going with it. And so many people, you know, with all the different allergies today can't eat soy, even in its fermented, safer fermented form. So, you know, people were asking, and it's been really popular, sort of just demoing it out and about, like, ooh, navy bean natto. And so I probably tried out 15, 20 different beans, just did little batches and experiments. And it was quite interesting. And I don't, you know, and I don't know, before I bring that in a wide way to the market, I really want to have that tested to see what is the K2 in that. Because people, that's one of the main reasons people are eating it, for the natto kinase, the K2, the PQQ. Right. So I do want to have some of these things tested. And so, but, you know, to me, it's sticky, so it looks like natto. So I think it must have good stuff in it. And it tastes good. So the navy bean has been over time the most successful, so that's kind of what I'm going with. So yeah,
and also some people have digestive issues with beans because beans can be tough on your digestion.
Yeah,
but once you ferment them,
yeah, you know, I mean, we've done everything. We've soaked them and we've fermented them, and so yeah. It's, and I think traditionally people had found that to be true. It was considered like a fast food. You know, in Japan, you could, like you said, get it from the right. natto ice cream van, right? And but it was just easier to digest. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So who buys your natto?
So I'm just getting to the point where I'm going to be on shelves. So I've been presenting this, you know, at festivals, fermentation festivals, and I have people that, you know, sort of come to me directly for natto. So, I mean, but it's interesting. I think people have had some experience in Japan and miss it. Are definitely, and Japanese families that live in the United States and want their kids to have good food, or just for themselves, of course. Right. And then, of course, the folks who know all about the nutritional benefits and want it for those reasons.
Right. So it sounds like non-Japanese people.
Yeah. I mean, and Japanese people. So so it's really an interesting mix. Right. But it's been really interesting to sort of bring a wide, you know, because I was always told, oh, Japanese or American people will never like, no, you can never sell natto in America. Are you crazy? You know, here I am. So we'll find out.
Right. And also, yeah. I think, you know, when you eat natto in the States, everything's frozen for shipping.
Yeah.
And then if you make fresh one, that's a big difference.
That's a huge difference. And so I think once people experience that, they, you know, it's a really different experience for them if they've only known the frozen. Certainly, yeah.
Right. So, well, maybe you're changing the frontier of natto in Oregon, in the States.
Yeah, right. Definitely. That's my goal.
And yeah. One more thing, you know, you have a hikiwari natto.
Yeah, so hikiwari natto is traditionally made with like crushed soybeans. They're broken down first, I think, so that the cooking time is less. But you know, I've been experimenting bringing that to market with doing that or just chopping natto, and you know, and that's meant to really that's the form that I've found people really enjoy it the most is chopped.
Right.
It's an easy thing; they don't have to stir it. It's ready to go.
Right. So, but traditionally, hikiwari natto means you crush and peel off the skin.
Yeah. So I, you know, I'm sort of seeing in small-scale commercial production, right. which makes more sense. And, yeah, so probably we're going to go with tataki, you know, like chopped.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good, you know, good medium.
Yeah, right. I think so. I just have to figure out the production side of it.
You right. Because hikiwari is too much work.
I think, yeah, that's what I'm kind of finding, trying right. to crush my own. And yeah.
Okay. And so can listeners order your natto?
Yeah. So I have natto. You know, I think the best way would be, you know, just to contact me through the website, wampakunatto.com.
Okay. So yeah. That's wampakunatto.com.
Yes.
So wampakunatto.com.
Yes.
Okay. So what's your plan for the future?
Oh, I don't, you know, I really... I'd like to see, so it feels like natto is having its kimchi moment, and that, you know, kimchi used to be this weird thing that, you know, you just kept at home. If you're Korean, don't share it with your American friends. It's too stinky. And it feels to me, just doing this over time, that natto is having that moment where it's, you know, it's easier, you know, people are just enjoying it without any baggage of, you know, oh, it's an acquired taste. And so I'd really like to see it, you know, on fine dining menus, that flavor profile, the way we see koji, marinated pork or something like that on a menu, or sort of these interesting flavors, I think that it has a place.
Right. Well, actually, I just saw a chef's magazine, Japanese chef's magazine, and one very fancy restaurant. This guy used a basilis natto.
Yeah.
And then fermented pork meat.
Ah.
And then made it into sausage.
Oh.
That was amazing. So
Yes. Send me that article. Yeah. I'm really interested. Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of thing I'm really hoping to see come about.
Because I think the flavor of natto, it's strong, but, you know, it's not like by itself. You know, it's a strong fermenting bacteria.
Yeah.
So it adds flavors to, you know, if it's chefs, you're listening, so you have to try that.
Yes,
but
chefs,
natto.
Call me.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So like you said, you know, the kimchi became mainstream in a way.
Right.
And so did the kombucha.
Absolutely, right?
And, you know, like Smorgasburg, you know, incubator of a food business, made it kind of popular too, and so many cool brands.
Yep. So next is natto.
I think so.
I hope so. Yeah.
Right? I'm not joking. So.
No, I'm certainly not.
Right. So
that
good
is
luck.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
So hopefully we can talk about the Kyoto experience next time.
Yes, next time.
All right. So listeners, if you'd like to know more about Heidi's natto, again, it's wanpakunatto.com. It's WANPAKU, natto, NATTO.com. And it's a super cute website.
Oh, thank you.
And if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org. And Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays, always available at heritageradionetwork.org and iTunes and Stitcher as a podcast. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. And our engineer today is Vitor Harsh. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.